Today on Maine Calling, why it's important for young people to feel valued. Kids today are growing up in a complicated world with stresses like social media their parents never faced. The epidemic of anxiety and depression among young people, already a crisis, spiked during the pandemic. Many people who care about kids are struggling to figure out the best ways to help. One idea gaining traction is an approach called Mattering that aims to prevent depression and suicide among young people. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will talk with Maine teens and adults who are working to make sure that young people they know feel seen and heard, and how this might work. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org. And by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Navigating the teen years can not only be tough for young people, but also for the adults in their lives. Today, we're going to learn about an approach to supporting youth mental health that centers on the fact that every young person needs to feel seen, heard, and valued. This program is part of Maine Calling's coverage of Mental Health Awareness Month. Joining me for the hour, Dr. Delvina Miramati Baldino, who is Executive Director of Maine Youth Thriving. Her background is in education and psychology. Phoebe Williamson is a junior at Freeport High School involved with mental health support. She founded the Active Minds chapter in Freeport. And Sheila Nelson, program manager for adolescent health and injury prevention with the Maine Center for Disease Control and Prevention. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you want to know about helping the young person in your life who may be struggling with mental health issues? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you. Delvina, one of our past Maine Calling guests, social psychologist R.A. Kruglansky, has found that people's need to feel significant is among the most powerful forces out there. He says the quest for significance explains so many human behaviors. And this same idea that feeling like you matter is what your organization's focused on. Tell us what you mean when you use this term mattering in relationship to young people and their mental health.
Yeah, thank you for that question. Mattering is the sense of feeling seen, heard, valued, and adding value. And that work by Dr. Gordon Flett, it really has been shown to be a huge supporter in really the belief that you're significant to others and that your life has an impact in the community and the world in which you live in.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting because you use this phrase, positive childhood experiences. We've been hearing about adverse child experiences, ACEs, for a couple decades now. But this turns it around a little bit. Tell us about the research on positive childhood experiences.
Yeah, positive childhood experiences. The first study was published in 2019, so relatively new work. There's been a lot happening since then. But it's really thinking about, well, if the adverse experiences we have in childhood change our nervous system and our brain in ways that lead to what we know are kind of these detrimental adult physical and mental health issues, what if we look at positive childhood experiences? And what that research showed us that was so exciting is that despite having adverse childhood experiences, when we have positive childhood experiences, we actually are buffered and protected from those adverse consequences in adulthood. So in a dose-dependent way, the more positive childhood experiences one has, the more likely they are to have positive mental and physical health in adulthood.
Can you give me an example? I'm going to just pull out of my memory an adverse childhood experience might be a parent's going through a divorce or moving pretty often. How could a positive childhood experience help not only counterbalance, but come out help you come out ahead?
Yeah, so that's also one of the things when we look at the way we would classify positive childhood experiences being not these huge monumental moments in a child's life or a 6 month vacation, these big things. We're really talking about a caring and supportive teacher, feeling like they can share their emotions and feelings in the home in which they live in, feeling like they have love and support or they're connected to their community. So the role that we all play as the adults and caregivers in a child's life, if we show up in, these ways that are supportive and promote mattering and belonging, it does protect, the child. In ways that we could only imagine, can only imagine. Yeah.
Well, Phoebe, I'm going to turn to you. When you hear about this idea of mattering as a young person, does that resonate with you?
Oh, absolutely. The idea of mattering definitely resonates with me. I think it's something we talk a lot about at my high school. I think it's something that the staff are really concerned about making sure that students and all teenagers are feel like they are valued by their community, which a lot of times at this age, your core community is your high school. And so one thing we do on the Active Minds team that I lead is we plan and promote events that will strengthen the conversation about mental health, but also their fun activities that kids can do to feel like our school is a community that's dedicated not only to learning, but to mental well-being and making sure students are happy.
Phoebe, I'm thinking it might be a little bit of a sometimes a tricky needle to thread because you're talking about mattering, which is being significant and having people care about you. But then also, isn't one of the big issues for young people is that almost too much is being put on them? That older people are saying things like, you need to solve these problems, you are the future.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a balance. I think the way that you word things when you talk to youth is very important. And I think there is a lot of pressure that's put on young people today, especially when it comes to the future. So making sure that young people know that they matter not just because of the value that they have to the future, but also because of just who they are, and that the fact that they're a human on the earth and that makes them valuable.
And one of the reasons you're involved in this work is a very sad reason that you have a personal experience with a friend who died of suicide. What do you wish he had understood?
I think I wish that anyone who's struggling or has thoughts of suicide would understand that there are people that care about them and there are people who love them, even if they can't see it. And it sometimes takes some time or some work to find those people who are here for you no matter what. But they are out there and they will step up and help you.
Sheila, I'm going to turn to you. You know some of the numbers behind what we're talking about, and tell us what you're learning from the surveys that Maine CDC and others do with youth here in Maine and across the nation.
Yeah, Maine is actually really fortunate in that we have pretty good data on how young people feel like they do or don't matter in their communities. So every 2 years, Maine administers something that's called the Maine Integrated Youth Health Survey, which is an opportunity for students in middle and high school to answer a lot of questions about their lives and what they experience, including some of their subjective experiences of the communities around them. So we actually ask young people directly if they agree with the statement, I feel like I matter to people in my community. And what we see in the last time we administered the survey, which was 2023, is that About half of high school students and a little over that for middle school students agree that they value, that they matter to people in their community and that they're valued. Unfortunately, that's actually a number that's a little bit down. We've sort of been seeing the trend that fewer and fewer young people report feeling like they matter since, about 2017 when it was more like 60%. The reason we're concerned about that is at the same time, we've been seeing more young people reporting poor mental health, sort of symptoms of depression, even something like struggling with thoughts of suicide. And we know that there's a lot of factors that contribute to that. Mattering isn't the only thing, but as both Delvina and Phoebe mentioned, we know that that experience of being valued, that experience of feeling like you belong and are sort of an integral part of the lives of people around you, is a really powerful protective factor. Young people who feel that way are much less likely to also be experiencing some of those negative, impacts around poor mental health or substance misuse.
Sheila, I'm going to go back to the very first thing you said. Only about half of the kids surveyed feel like they matter.
Yeah, and again, this is our goal. As much as we work in, at Maine CDC and other places to prevent sort of quote unquote the bad stuff that young people struggle with, right? Substance misuse, tobacco use, again, poor mental health. The way that we do that is by increasing the good stuff, right? It's increasing mattering, it's increasing connections to positive, caring adults in your community. It's increasing a lot of that feeling of being cared for and valued and safe at school that Phoebe mentioned. And so if we start seeing, sort of those trends and the good stuff going down, we expect in some ways to see some of that negative stuff going up. And that's not the balance that we want to be seeing. And so this is a really it's a really important public health issue for us, even if it may not seem that way to a lot of people. The good news is that this is actually something that every adult in a community can do to change. We don't have to be implementing a program or have a degree or initials after your name. Literally every adult in any community can improve that number by showing up for young people in any number of ways, by volunteering to coach a sports team or just connecting with your kids' friends or showing up to support your high school musical that goes on every year, right? Like making young people feel like adults will show up for them and again, value their contributions, as Phoebe said, is really critical to that subjective feeling of mattering.
Phoebe, you are nodding vigorously. What would you like to add to what Sheila has said?
I absolutely agree with you, Sheila. I think there are infinite ways that you can show up for a young person or any person in your life. I think that that statistic of how few high school and middle school people feel like they matter really rings true from what I've experienced. I think that since the pandemic, especially with all this isolation and the increase of social media and online usage, I think that young people feel just even more isolated. But one way you can counteract that is by just showing up for them in these little and big ways. And something small, like getting them their favorite Starbucks drink, mom, if you're listening, or just like showing up to their sports, mentioning something that you know they're passionate about, asking them about their day. These are small things that don't take a lot of effort from the adult, but they show each little one shows to young people that they matter.
On the line with us now is Susie Pond, who is a digital journalist and producer and founder of Red Bird Media Group. Thanks so much for joining the conversation, Susie.
Thank you so much for having me.
You worked with Delvina to create some videos that highlight kids' voices on this subject of mattering. Tell us what prompted you to get involved in this issue.
You sure did. Well, first of all, as a mother of two young boys, this is paramount and top of mind. But also, unfortunately, in Freeport, we lost a young neighbor to suicide a few years ago. And holding the community grief, I wanted to do something that would empower youth to sort of, you know, to take back the conversation of mattering and really to center them in the process. And that's what we created. So we created four PSAs that two of them are directed to youth and two of them are directed to caregivers and adults.
Okay, well, we have a clip of the four videos you mentioned. This is one of those in which kids address adults.
I want you to know that being a kid now is far more complex than when you were a kid.
We're growing up in a way different society.
It's very easy to feel like you're not enough or you're left out.
Listening is important because sometimes people don't feel heard.
We can't always pinpoint what's causing it. I just wish like adults knew that sometimes we just have those days where it's like, okay, this is just a hard day, I'm stressed, but I'm not exactly sure why.
You're not trying to fix it, you're just validating their feelings and validating like their experience.
Even if it just means sitting there and nodding along to what they're saying.
Adults can show me that my thoughts and opinions matter when they're obviously engaged in what I'm doing.
Take the time to listen. Don't take it for granted.
Susie, what struck you about the young people you interviewed for the videos? Did anything about their answers surprise you or stick with you?
Actually, yes. I would say I was most surprised by the frequency of social media as their answer to why it's hard now to grow up. I wasn't surprised in the sense that I know a lot of kids are on it, but I think I was expecting something larger, like climate change or fill in the blank, right? But it reminded me that their worlds are very, very, very small. And this idea of being constantly reflective is just harmful. So I would say that was the number one thing that I took away. But also their, you know, I was amazed by their bravery and their willingness to show up and to talk about it. And I think that's really where the hope is.
Mm. And Susie, where will people be seeing these PSAs?
Absolutely. So you can see them at MaineResilience.org and at Redbird Media Group. They're also on our social media channels, and we hope they find their ways out there. Also, I've found out that they actually showed two of them to my son's entire fifth grade class at the Freeport High School. So I think there is an opportunity for these to be used in an educational setting.
Well, thank you so much. That was journalist and producer Susie Pond with Redbird Media Group. We're going to take a quick break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are focusing on youth mental health and why this concept of mattering can help young people feel valued and build resilience and help prevent depression and suicide. My guests today are Phoebe Williamson, who's a junior at Freeport High School. She started a chapter of Active Minds there. Sheila Nelson manages Maine CDC's Adolescent Health and Injury Prevention Program, and Dr. Delvina Miramati Baldino is Executive Director of Maine Youth Thriving. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you want to know about how to talk to or listen to the young people in your life? What questions do you have about this idea of mattering? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram, or of course, give us a call. 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now is Quinn Worley. She is a junior at Kennebunk High School, where she's editor of the school paper. Thanks so much for calling in, Quinn.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And wondering, as a high school student, have you or many of your friends struggled with mental health issues?
Definitely. I've seen firsthand effects of this, and I've seen secondary effects of this on my friends. And I think overall that there is a very big and very noticeable problem with mental health among young people today. And even though it might be talked about more, I feel like people don't really know the ways of going about addressing it.
Yeah, when you hear about this concept of mattering, somehow conveying to another teen that they matter and are valued by the people around them, do you think that would make a difference for a friend or classmate who's depressed or even considering suicide?
I think definitely yes, because one of the biggest thoughts that goes through a teen's mind when they're in a mental state like that or considering suicide just at a very low point in their life is they don't matter. And if they were gone, nothing would change. The world would keep spinning. But when you kind of take a step back and zoom out to look at the bigger picture of things, I think that every small part of a working community truly does matter. And I think really instilling that into teens, whether it be through public media or just smaller meetings between the teen and a trusted adult, I think it's really important to kind of convey that greater global message across.
Quinn, I understand you're interested in going into journalism. I have to ask you, why? Why do you want to go into journalism?
Well, I think journalism is such a powerful tool. I think the media can be used in a lot of different ways to convey information, but also opinions and new aspects of technology. And I feel like journalism is kind of right now at the forefront of all the media and kind of all the learning that we produce, but also what we take in personally. And I think that journalism is just such a wonderful outlet to be able to learn from others, but also express feelings of your own. Being the editor-in-chief of my school paper, I've definitely seen that, being able to edit articles from others, but also produce articles myself and really feel like I'm making an impact on my school community.
Quinn, thank you so much for calling in and good luck to you. Kennebunk High School junior Quinn Worley calling in to our program today. I want to turn back to you, Delvina, and the idea of, okay, we understand this concept of mattering, but how do you put that idea into action? I know Maine Youth Thriving has trainings and workshops with parents and educators. What do adults need to know, on the ground? Give us some advice.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things at Maine Youth Thriving that we're really trying to do is take all these concepts and this research and not just, share that knowledge, but then put it into practice. And what does it look like in practice? And as a mom of four little ones, I often think, how am I living this work? So I would say, to anyone out there who is a neighbor, a bus driver, anyone who's, in contact with youth, thinking about seeing heard values, seen, am I truly seeing these children? Am I getting down on their level? Am I making eye contact? Am I putting away my phone, right? As a parent, it's like, am I stopping to cook dinner for a minute as my child is talking next to me? We're often in automatic pilot and just moving through our days so quickly, and there are so many demands on us. So how can we slow down, truly help that child feel seen, heard? In our PSAs, you'll hear the theme that came up over and over again was just listen. Just listen. We don't need you to fix it. We don't need you to tell us what to do or give advice. We just want you to hear us and listen. And then, value, just truly finding ways to give them opportunities to add value to your home, to your, community, give them leadership opportunities, really value their contribution. They are little human beings, not just children.
And Sheila, you've been nodding. I'm wondering if there's research or evidence about, Delvina was talking about getting down on the ground with your little ones. And I think that often what happens is parents can give kids a lot of attention when they're little, but they hit some point in their life, especially as teenagers, where the kids are asserting independence and the parents are sort of ready to let them be independent. And I'm wondering if my gut feeling that this sort of 13, 14 year old age group is especially fraught one for that relationship and for this idea of mattering.
Yeah, being the parent or a caregiver of a young person as they enter into adolescence is hard. It's a tough job, right? Because we want to give young people the opportunity to have autonomy, to sort of practice making their own decisions and, you know, even if sometimes those decisions don't turn out quite the way that we might have hoped they would. So we want to sort of give that space, and that is really important. And at the same time, we don't want to disengage. And so I think there's this line of, you know, as sort of Delvina mentioned, really listening, like not just for the answers we want to hear, but for stuff that might, you know, be something that we don't fully understand or might even make us uncomfortable, to not kind of jump in there and try to fix a situation. Always, you know, if you're struggling, I always say that as an adult, you can always just turn to asking questions, right? And again, really listening for those answers, not just, you know, trying to pry for information or anything like that, but just trying to get the real experience of how young people move through their lives. It's, I promise you, it's different than the way it was when I was in high school, or probably the way that most of us were in high school. I do also want to say real quick, just because I know it's come up in the conversation, that because we have been talking about suicide, I just want to remind folks that if anyone, you or a loved one of any age, is struggling with thoughts of suicide or a mental health crisis, that they can call or text or chat 988 any time of the day to find someone who will listen to them and give them support and get them connected to care.
You know, Delvina, something Sheila said reminded me of, I think we keep talking, I keep using the word tricky. So tricky navigating all of this. But, you know, there are young people, there's a lot of conversation around young people and resilience, and how helicopter parents who do too much and fix too much are also putting their children at risk of not being resilient adults. So this is tricky, isn't it? Where you want to be there for your children, you want to listen to your children, but you don't want to try to fix everything.
100%. Yeah. And I feel that urge as a mom, and I know so many caregivers, right? It's hard to sit in the uncomfortable feelings with somebody that you care about, especially, you know, a youth who's struggling. But I think really, as Sheila mentioned, I just keep thinking of be curious, right? And that helps promote resilience by, you know, instead of answering the question, ask another question. Well, what do you think about that? And what does it feel like when somebody does that? And how?
Oh, shoot, you froze. Hopefully your video will come back, Delvina. Your Zoom connection will come back. We'll go to Marty calling from Hollowell. Hi, Marty. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks so much. I'm glad you guys were just mentioning the helicopter parenting. I think there's plenty of ground in between ignoring and just affirming every single thing said. But I was really glad Phoebe mentioned the social media aspect. I think that's a much bigger factor than is appreciated. A lot of studies show the dramatic change since the advent of the front-facing camera, and they're
you know, help them.
Concern being that they may be trying to fix the effects of something false, this false need to matter, rather than the issue that may have caused it. You know, coping skills are just as important, I think.
Yeah. Phoebe, can you characterize for us adults? You know, I think many adults are on Facebook and maybe are on Instagram, but don't interact with social media the way that teenagers do. How often are teenagers on social media? What are they doing on social media? Are they following each other? Are they looking to mentors? Just sort of explain all of this to those of us who might be perplexed about why this is so intrusive in yours and other teenagers' lives.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it is 100% true that teenagers are using social media in a very different way than a lot of adults are, especially adults who are parents to teenagers right now. And I think the number one thing that I think of when I think of these problems with social media is the comparison. For girls especially, there is just incessant comparison on your bodies, on your friends, on the things that you do to for fun, and like followers and likes and comments. And there's all these different numbers on all these different platforms that are almost like a status symbol. So I think that's a big one, but it also is just the isolation of it. You're kind of put in this bubble that you can really be in a place where there's just one type of opinion. And if that opinion is you don't matter, if you're gone, and it's in that kind of echo chamber of social media algorithm, then that can be really, really harmful to young people.
Okay. Well, Marty, thank you so much for your call. And I think we have Delvina back. Delvina, you're giving us some guidance about when you cut off about how you might want to talk to your teenager. So go ahead and continue that.
Yeah, thank you so much. My apologies. Really just thinking about, you know, being curious as kind of a leading idea in your head. So rather than as you're listening to your child, try to think about, you know, how can I help them in this moment? You know, how can I give them advice? But really just ask curious questions. You know, what is, you know, what does that feel like for you? Or what do you think you should do? Or, you know, what do you think would be the best way to move forward? Or how would you like to respond to that? So again, just really leaning into curiosity as a way of helping that child explore the experience or that youth, instead of jumping to try to fix it. It also sends the signal that it's okay to be experiencing these difficult emotions. It's okay to be uncomfortable and upset right now. When we jump in to fix things as the adult without trying to, we're really sending the message that they need to get out of this state that they may be having. And really it's just, you know, difficult emotions are just giving us information about our experience. So really helping them explore the experience rather than try to move them out of it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, thanks for that, Delvina. I'm going to go to an email here from Pam. An important part of the conversation is the connection to peer groups. My son took his life. He struggled with emotional balance after a traumatic teen experience of being molested. He made himself isolated. He didn't feel loved. He struggled with his connection to peers and people. He was very much a loner, and it mattered to the story. And I think employment, peer group connections, and a purpose, these are all important, that sense of worthiness. It's a very sad story. I see lost youth. They don't know where to go next or what to do next. And Sheila, before you were talking about the helpline, a place to start. You said 988?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, young people can call that or text that line or anything, or you can do it on behalf again of a loved one or a friend. You'll get connected to someone here in Maine who can talk to you about what kind of resources are available for you here. And again, just want to share, you know, a huge thank you and honor that mom who wrote in about their child. You know, a loss by suicide is something that affects not just a family, but an entire community. I think you've already heard that from several young people. And I know from that experience that young people themselves are really worried for their friends, and they know what kind of a toll it takes on a community when they lose a friend that they care about very deeply. So we know that there are things that people can do to help reduce the risk of suicide among young people. And, you know, sort of Delvina already kind of mentioned being willing to sit with the conversation. And a big part of that is really asking young people how they feel in a very honest way. And that includes if you are worried about a young person in your life or a young person is worried about a friend, that they can ask very directly if that young person is having thoughts of suicide and to not shy away from that question. It is not going to, you know, increase the likelihood that that young person, you know, acts on that thought. We know it's actually the opposite. It's the opportunity to get them connected to help, to feel like people around them, again, care and value them. They want them to stay here and they want them to be with us and the people who love them, and that they care enough about that to lean into the hard stuff and to really be present for young people and get them the help that they need as quickly and as, you know, comprehensively as they can. 988 is a great place to start for that. People feel like they don't know where to start.
Yeah, and Phoebe, I want to turn to you because a really important part of Pam's email here is that her son felt isolated and didn't feel loved. The teenagers are tricky enough. So many teenagers want to feel at least, if not popular, at least somewhat cool. That's probably even an old-fashioned word, but and it might feel difficult to reach out to the kid who's a little bit different and a little bit of a loner. What is your advice for other teenagers and or for parents who are listening to talk to their teenagers about reaching out to that kid who isn't cool?
I think there are a lot of different ways that you can do that, but just reaching out is already a step that they probably haven't experienced before. Reaching out to someone who you don't see make a lot of connections and trying to find a common ground with them, whether it's music or a TV show or a sport they play, something that you guys can connect about. And while it might start off as something surface level, just beginning that connection can really lead to more deep conversations.
Is the lunchroom still a place that's sort of difficult for kids? I mean, is there someone you can invite to sit with you at lunch?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think school is a place that you can find new connections all the time, in classes and in the lunchroom, on sports teams. So also seeking out those connections can be really scary, but as daunting as it is really beneficial to go out and search for those connections. So try something new, join a new team, do a different club. And I think that you really can't go wrong with just trying to branch out.
All right. Well, we are talking about youth mental health and the emerging concept of mattering, putting mattering at the center of this. Join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email if you're quick, talk@mainepublic.org, or find us on social media. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. For Mental Health Awareness Month, we are focusing on youth mental health and how mattering can be the key to helping young people feel valued and resilient. Joining me, Sheila Nelson with Maine CDC, Delvina Miramati-Baldino with Maine Youth Thriving, and Phoebe Williamson, who is a student at Freeport High School. Share your comments and questions. If you're quick, an email, talk@mainepublic.org, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to Philip here, who's calling from Standish. Hi, Philip. Go ahead.
Hi. So I just wanted to bring up the idea of agency and how it relates to mattering. I think, like, I've had a little bit of experience with depression and suicidal ideation, and usually in those very low moments, I'm in a place where I feel like the actions that I take do not have a lasting impact on the world around me. And I think social media can sometimes have an effect of making things very transient, and the things that you do sort of kind of vanish moments after you do them. I think that might be contributing a little bit to some of the social woes that we have today.
Delvina.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about feeling valued and adding value, it's in that crossover with that sense of agency, feeling like you can make valuable contributions, and those contributions really do matter in the world, right? That you're making a difference and an impact. So I completely agree with that overlap with providing these opportunities through this sense of mattering that allow for that sense of agency.
Yeah. Philip, thank you so much for calling in. An email here from Justin. I've been riveted by the conversation on youth mental health. I was especially struck by Susie Pond's observation that social media is a principal driver of stress and anxiety for teens. At Maine Coast Semester at Shewanke, we see that reality every day and we address it head on. Each fall and spring, we bring 40 high school juniors from public and independent schools nationwide to our coastal campus for a four-month period. A phone-free semester, students explore how people and ecosystems thrive together, practice land stewardship, and these other goals as well. And they say our formal and informal surveys of students pre and post semester show marked declines in anxiety and significant gains in focus and resilience. So 4 months without a phone, Phoebe, to most kids, that would probably seem like cutting off your arm, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that email brings up a really good point of when students are in these intentional spaces that are tailored to the needs of young people and their mental well-being, they really thrive. And so if you're an adult or a caretaker of a young person, making sure that, you know, the space that you provide is a place that is open and is just a place that young people can really share what they're going through and be perhaps without a phone or social media, but also just an intentional space.
And that reminds me, you know, there's a movement right now. Several school districts have already banned cell phones in schools. There's a statewide bill. I don't know the status of it right now, but across the country. Phoebe, what do you think of that idea?
I think that at my school, we have a phone ban right now, and I think that they can be beneficial, but I also think that it might not be the best way to teach students how to go about the increasing use of technology. Instead, I think giving students the skills to manage their own screen time usage instead of just putting a blanket ban would be a little bit better.
Yeah, interesting and insightful. Here from Frank, parents can demonstrate that their children matter by putting down their own phones when they're in the presence of their children and focusing their attention to their children. Make eye contact, be physically close, engage in conversation. Sheila, I see you nodding.
Yeah, and I think Phoebe made a really good point, right? I think it's not just the absence of something that we think might be problematic, right? Like not being on your phone. It's providing something else that encourages community, right? Like we can't just say no. We have to put something in that place. And so, you know, there are a lot of things that young people can do together, that young people can do in partnership with adults, right, that are in person and engaged and actually sort of, you know, are naturally less likely to have young people or adults being on their phones, right? Art and music and theater and physical activity and hiking and fishing and hunting, right? Like those are all things that young people can do together or do with adults in their lives that, you know, you're engaged with your friends, you're engaged, you know, with adults who care about you. That's not in front of a screen. And screens are not altogether bad, right? There are ways in which young people can stay connected through a device. It's, you know, just as Phoebe said, it's important to make sure that we provide opportunities for breaks, right? To let our brains really reset to some of those in-person conversations and some of that, you know, just day-to-day social stuff. That I think even as adults we're sort of challenged with in today's environment. You know, I know personally I could do better about not sort of just using my phone as a way to check out, to sort of sit and listen a little bit harder and be a little bit more present. And I think that's something that we can model for young people by doing a little bit of a better job of it ourselves.
We'll go to Louisa calling from Kittery. Hi, Louisa, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to make a comment. I think there's a self-absorption that's going on in our society, and I think the media and the pharmaceutical industry should take responsibility for making people feel if they're not sick or if they don't have a mental problem, they should. And all of the side effects that are listed with the pharmaceutical ads, it's appalling. And I think if a lot of these younger generation people would stop thinking about themselves and start thinking about others and ways that they can engage in a community, they'd be a lot healthier and they wouldn't have these mental issues.
Louisa, so thanks for your call. And Davina, I'm going to turn to you. Your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think that's the piece of mattering that's so valuable, is the adding value, the altruism and gratitude that come with giving to the world and showing appreciation for others, and really those altruistic acts that both benefit the world, but we also know it's almost like a runner's high that you get from the act of kindness is beneficial to your own well-being. So I think there are really encouraging that as much as possible, if not just wanting to be valued, but adding value, and the role that plays in that individual's well-being is really important.
Phoebe.
I agree with you, Delvina, and I think that it's also important to note that in order to add to your community and to take care of your community, you have to be able to take care of yourself. So if we are struggling internally or we're not able to regulate ourselves as young people, it's much, much harder to add to the community and to make bigger change, which I think also is something we touched on before, as a lot of adults are really putting that pressure on young people to be the change of the next generation. And I think a lot of young people are ready to step up to that, but first they need to know how to take care of themselves and regulate themselves.
You know, it's so interesting because, Phoebe, you are talking about not feeling, not wanting to have that pressure to be the change, but you've already made such an impact by founding this organization at the chapter of Active Minds. And I'm wondering what it has done for you to be able to do something so concrete to help others.
It has made a huge impact on my life and on my mental health. Thinking that I have a value and I have a place in my community and in my school, that my work is going to make a difference, because every peer of mine that comes up to me and tells me that they had fun at our event, or wants to join the team and ask me where our next meeting is, that shows me that what we are doing as a team is making an impact. So I think being a part of community action absolutely can help the individual's mental health, for sure.
All right. Louisa, thanks so much for your call. Let's see. I think we can squeeze in one more call. We'll go to Christine from Yarmouth. Hi, Christine. Go ahead.
Hi. I've been listening intently to this. I taught public school for 24 years. And what's left out of the conversation is kids that are in the queer community, the LGBTQ community, who are already at a much higher risk for not only being isolated and needing folks that matter when they're very different from sort of the mainstream, and also to call attention to how much more bullying happens to them, you know, over cell phones that they have to counter in their daily lives.
Christine, thank you for calling in about that. And I'm going to go back to you, Phoebe, and ask for your thoughts and the work that you do with kids who are in the LGBTQ community in your world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there are a lot of different groups that are especially susceptible to struggles with their mental health, but the LGBTQ community is at the forefront of that. And there is this bit, like a large amount of ostracization of them. And it just comes back to like reaching out, making sure that they know they matter. And if you want to start a larger movement or be part of a bigger change, it has to start right with you, and then it can ripple out. So I think the most important thing to start with is making sure that you can be respectful, and no one's perfect, but these little signs of respect, like using someone's preferred pronouns, calling them by their preferred name, making space for people, hanging a flag, and it can be in any marginalized community, but starting with yourself and the way you treat others is going to show the people around you that they should be treated the same.
And Sheila, go ahead.
Yeah, and I just want to say that, you know, we sort of talked a little bit about that data at the beginning, and the data bears that out as well. What Phoebe's saying is that, you know, we said that sort of maybe half of young people overall report feeling like they matter. For LGBTQ young people, that's closer to like a third. So you're really talking about two-thirds of young people who identify as LGBT not feeling valued in their communities. And, you know, that you know, is contributed by a lot of sort of some of the, again, sort of small and not so small ways in which, you know, young people might not feel like they're valued and seen and understood for who they are. And so I think it's really important to do, as Phoebe said, even if it's small stuff, that can make a really big difference, just being an adult that a young person can count on to care about them is huge.
Well, I want to thank all of you for this conversation today. The voice you just heard was Sheila Nelson, who is the manager for Maine CDC's Adolescent Health and Injury Prevention Program. Also with us, Dr. Delvina Miramade Baldino, who is executive director of Maine Youth Thriving, and Phoebe Williamson, a junior at Freeport High School and founder of her local Active Minds chapter. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, the latest political news in Maine and the nation. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.